Hello, welcome back to Utter Animus, my podcast. Hello, hi. If you hear fans in the background, it is too hot for this. So sorry for any kind of fan sound you might hear in I don't know, however long this podcast is, because it's too hot. It's very, very hot. So I've been wanting to do this particular podcast since March, and I've been putting it off because I think I was concert high. So I've been wanting to do this for so long, and I finally got the, I don't know, courage to finally go ahead and go, let's do this, and go ahead and sort of basically start it. And let's get the introduction out of the way before I fully start, I guess you can say. So welcome back. I'm Lulu, your host. You're listening to Utter Animus Podcast, and we're doing a spotlight artist. So in March, and if you've been listening to my podcast in the last, since March, you would have known that I went to a concert, and it was my first real concert and not a tribute band concert. Nothing wrong with tribute bands. I love tribute bands, but this particular band I've been wanting to go for some time, and they were here, and thanks to a really good friend, I got to go with him, and it was a blast. I had so much fun, and I wanted to do the podcast at like 2 in the morning, and I put it off and basically wrote down all of my feelings and thoughts, and I recently reopened the notebook to sort of look at it and go, yeah, no, this is not podcasting material, because it was a jumbled mess. I had no cohesive thought, which is usually me. I never have a cohesive thought, or like a train thought, a cohesive line of thought. It's always just kind of a jumbled mess. But because it was 2 in the morning, and I was very coming off of a concert high, and I really, really, really didn't want like concert amnesia to set in, so I like wrote everything down, and I was just, we can do this, and no, we cannot do this. So the band I'm talking about, if you guys did not take a look at the title screen wherever you are listening to, is Tool. And I have been a fan of Tool since probably my middle school years, and I got to go, and it was so much fun, and they were here, and I was like, oh my gosh, they are a type of artists that are performance as well. Like, it's such an experience that I don't see many newer bands do, unless you're into K-pop music, I guess, because they're also a performance type of band. And if you're there just for the music, then by all means, good for you. I'm the same way, and I'm just saying that not a lot of bands are performance bands, and these guys are. They take their art and their music very, very seriously, and it's what made me fall in love with them, because of their unique style that I, at the time, the music I was into didn't really do. I just remember going, I would love to see them live, and obviously they've been playing since the 80s, 90s. I never thought I would get to see them in concert, because a lot of older musicians don't do a lot of concerts anymore, or they do very sporadic concerts. And Tool, their members are also a part of like many other works and other bands, and so I never thought I would see them in concert, and plus tickets are massively expensive. If you've been to a concert recently, they're pretty up there in price, but it was a privilege and an honor to go. However, saying that, I really wish I did the 2 a.m. post-concert podcast to really, like, just get a jumbled mess out. Anyways, I've listened to Tool since middle school, as I said before, and my first introduction to them probably shouldn't have been my first song. It was Sober. I just remember I loved this song, and when I got older, I could appreciate it more because I understood what the song actually meant. Which, if you've listened to their song and looked at their works, and not just their music, but their artistry as well, Their songs are really, really poignant and still fall in today's kind of what the world falls into today. And it was one of those things, like, I love them so much. They're one of my favorite. And I was so happy because I was able to get a hoodie too. And unfortunately, if anybody knows, merch is expensive, unfortunately. And I was able to get one thing. So I like saved up a little bit of money that I had and was able to get one thing. And I was just enamored pretty much the entire time, the entire experience. And I was really, really privileged to go with the person I went to because we share a sort of similar energy where we just like to listen. I'm very much a listener. I'm not the type of person that'll stand out and rock out and everything like that. I really just love listening. And it was my first real concert, and I just wanted to experience it as much as possible. So I'm like watching what's going on, what they have going on screen, which, by the way, if you've been to a Tool concert, they prohibit any kind of recording media, whether it be video or photographs, unless it's pre-approved, I guess you can say, for like press and stuff. They prohibit it. They have people going around and they'll kick you out and everything like that until Maynard, the main singer, goes, you can now bring out your cameras. And in our case, he turned around and said, no flash, because flashing is annoying. So I only grabbed a few shots, which I'll show if you are watching this on YouTube, which will eventually get there. I'll show on YouTube. If I might upload this to Spotify, because Spotify now has a video thing now. But if you're just listening to this, I will have it up as soon as possible. But no pictures of me, just pictures of the stage. It's really neat. They have what the art that they use can be quite unsettling if you're not used to it. And a lot of the art is made by the members and another person that I cannot remember. But the art is very much a part of the band. It's what drew me to, because they do a lot of stop motion for their music videos. And I kind of lost my train of thought. I forgot where we started on that, but that's okay. Anyways, I guess it was just... it was so much fun. And I'm really regretting not doing that 2 a.m. podcast now, because I'm trying to get all my thoughts together. And I'm actually doing this pretty much off the top of my head. I don't have a script in front of me. If you want an article, go over to my articles. Obviously, the link will be in whatever description box you find. And I'm actually listening to them right now, actually, as I record this podcast. I think it's Lateris that's on right now. And they did not play that. I don't think they played this song during their concert. But the two songs that I never anticipate for them to play, because if you are into concert going and whatnot, this concert was actually a anniversary type thing for their Fear Inoculum, release, which is probably their most recent release. Fear Inoculum was their most recent release. And then they had Opiate Squared re-recorded and re-released in 2021, March of last year. So they played a lot of their songs from Fear Inoculum. So when I found that out pre-concert, I actually was like, I actually hadn't listened to a lot of Fear Inoculum from that album. I obviously listened to Fear, the song itself. It has such a unique sound with the bell. I want to say the increasing bell song, and that was a pattern throughout the concert. But the two songs that I did not anticipate for them to play was two of my favorites, which was Sober, which I mentioned before is one of my favorites, and The Pot, which I believe both of them come from their Undertow album. Oh, I want to say it came from their Undertow album. I know Sober came from their Undertone album. Oh, my brain. I want to say both of them came from Undertow, but don't quote me on that. I might have to look that up and probably put going, no, The Pot does not come from Undertow. Yeah, Editor Lulu here. No, the pot does not come from Undertow. It comes from 10,000 Days. Regular scheduled back right back to the podcasting, Lulu? I know for sure Sober comes from Undertow. From their Undertow album, which is one of their... I think it was their second album, because Opiate was their first album. And Tool is a progressive type of band. So when they released Undertow, it was during the height of like alternative rock and grunge rock. And this was their first full album release, Undertow. And they released songs that were now a part of their Opiate EP. And this was during the time when censorship for music was very, very big. I'm not sure how to describe it. I mean, they still have censorship stickers that go on to certain albums and stuff like that. And you'll see that, you know, around. That's still a thing. But this was when Tool was starting to release music regularly, I guess you can say. Which, by the way, they don't release music regularly. They release music whenever they pretty much feel like it's finished. They basically challenged the censorship guys, I guess you can say, and I'll get into that a little later because that was a huge thing in the 90s. So when they released Undertow, like I said, they released censorship labels, and this included their album, or the artwork on the album being sold at none other than Walmart. But despite the fact that they were getting censorship labels and censorship for their artwork, and thanks to their touring schedule at the time for like Lollapalooza, they were able to get a gold certification from the RIAA for Undertone and platinum status. Sober, which is one of my favorite songs, if you've not listened to, I always, if you're creeped out easily, I do not suggest watching the music video because it's stop motion and it is slightly creepy. But to get the full experience for the song Sober, I do recommend to go see the music video, and it's still on YouTube and whatnot. They got best video by a new artist for their title track Sober because of the direction they decided to take with their music video. And it was stop motion and claymation. I forgot the claymation. And it's such a unique take on this, and this is pretty much how they got to be known for their progressive work and the type of style that they tend to lean towards. And not just their... A lot of people say their work is unsettling when they look at it, or maybe, as I mentioned before, creepy is the word that comes to mind a lot. But to get to full experience, I really, really recommend to go see it. So following Sober, they released their next title track, which I guess is their B-side track, Prison Sex. They're once again a target for censorship. So this song, if you've not listened to it, it's part of their Undertow. It dealt with child abuse, and it was primarily written by Adam Jones, who's the guitarist for Tool. And he approached it by saying, and I quote, that it was a surrealistic interpretation. Now, many journalists actually applauded the band for the lyrics in the music video. Once again, they took a more creepier style with the music video. It's kind of stop motion, kind of claymation. But others really didn't like the song. They thought the music video and the song was inappropriate. And actually, MTV, and this is when MTV actually played music videos, stopped actually airing the video after only maybe a handful of showings. Now, their next lineup, actually, I totally overskipped Opiate, but Opiate was an EP. I should probably tell you who the band members are. So, same main singer is Maynard James Keenan, or just Maynard. Guitarist is Adam Jones. Bassist is Justin Chancellor, but he replaced Paul D'Amore, I think sometime in the mid-90s. And drummer is Danny Carey. Now, originally, the band name Tool wasn't actually going to be Tool. It was going to be Lacrimology, I think it was. And I don't know why that was a choice. I did some research on the actual, like, before Tool became Tool. And there's not much on that. However, the reason they settled on Tool, and I quote from Maynard, he says, It's so people could use us as a catalyst in your process of finding out whatever it is you need to find out or whatever it is you're trying to achieve. So literally they were hoping that Tool would become Tool for individuals, that they would use their music as a tool for processing and everything. And after 2 years, they took 2 years of dedicating their time to practice, they finally signed with Zoo Entertainment. And in 1992, they released Tool's first work called Opiate. Now, this was an EP, and it included songs such as Hush and, obviously, Opiate. And this is where I come up with the censorship stuff. So, Hush was a song dedicated to the Parents Music Resource Center and their censorship of music. So these are the people I was talking to about earlier. They're called the PMRC. They were formed sometime in the 80s, and a lot of people were like they had a war on music. It's kind of like the war on video games, if you think about it. Now, the PMRC disbanded on its own sometime in the mid to late 90s. However, the parental warning and advisory stickers that you see on music today, they were basically the start of it. So after the release, Tool actually began touring with Roland's Band, Fishbone, Rage Against the Machine, White Zombie, and Corrosion of Conformity, and it was considered to be a positive review, actually. So we already did Undertow, so Anemia and Olivia. I always mess this one up. Salival, I think it is. Now, as I mentioned before, Paul D'Amore left Tool, and it was totally and completely amicable from what I could find. He wanted to pursue other projects, which included actually showcasing his range as a musician, and he became a part of Lusk, the cover band Replicants, Fearsome Engine, and he actually ended up composing music for TV and music movies, and he was replaced by Justin Chancellor, who is still a part of Tool and was a former member of Peach. Now, Anima, and I know I mispronounced that earlier, I said Anemia, but Anima came out in 1996 and was their second full-length album. Their title track, like a lot of their title tracks, received limited airplay, and it was called Stink Fist. Now, this song is 5 minutes long. They wanted it to be shortened and the lyrics altered. Now, when it was played on air, it was changed to track number one because of its... Stink Fist has a lot of offensive connotations. So, I might end up actually have to put a parental warning on this myself. Now, fans were livid. They were so mad at the strong censorship that this particular song got. And responding to this basically backlash, Mike Pennefield of MTV's 120 Minutes expressed not only regrets over the changes, but took the time to explain to fans and viewers why the song was being censored and why the song was being sort of targeted for all of this. Now, Anima actually had Grammy-nominated artwork. This is where we get into the artwork, specifically. Now, there is a artwork that became the album artwork itself. And this particular artwork was called The Smoke Box, and it was by Cam DeLeon, and it was his collaboration with Jones. Now, this piece, which DeLeon actually does a lot of their artwork, and it's super nice, actually. He was approached by Jones regarding this particular art, The Smoke Box, which would later actually end up being played on big screens during live events. And they do this a lot. They'll put a screen in front of, depending on where you see them, there is two types of screens. One in front of the band that's sort of like a mesh type screening, and then one huge projection type screen in the back. Now, DeLeon went on record later saying that he was surprised at how powerful it was. projected that large. After that, Adam had the idea to use the lenticular jewel case to animate it on the cover of Onima. Now, if you get the old cases, they're slightly old. They're slightly lenticular. They don't make them that way too much anymore, but I digress a little bit. Now, they went on a two-week tour following the release of Onima, and they landed in various parts of Europe, including New Zealand and Australia, before returning to the U.S. in time for Lollapalooza in 97, where they were the headliner, which was awesome. Onima became Grammy Award-winning and appeared on several best albums of 1996. Before being certified triple platinum by the RIAA in 03. Now, in 98, they joined Ozzy Fest in the US and were co-headliner act before Ozzy Osbourne himself. 98 wasn't a good year for them. They faced several lawsuits because of their contract, quote-unquote contract violations and loss of commissions. The now obsolete, they no longer exist, Zoo Entertainment, a successor did emerge during this time called Volcano Entertainment sued Tool, citing contract violations because Tool was looking at other contracts, which in my opinion, bands are going to do. When their contract is over, I see them looking at other contracts to explore their options because they want to do more, they want to do less, they want to do things that they've been wanting to do for a while, but let's skip over that a little bit. They end up settling out of court, and they actually end up having another lawsuit from their then manager Ten Gardner, who had been dismissed. Now, fans in 1998 became very worried that Tool was disbanding because of all the lawsuits, because of everything that was happening. Maynard, remember when I said that Tool has a lot of other projects, a lot of other works? I'm going to get into that right now. Now, Maynard is a part of a Perfect Circle with longtime guitar tech Billy Howardell. Jones joined the Melvins with Buzz Osborne, and Carrie joined Dead Kennedys. With the band very, very obviously split up with other projects, they became increasingly worried that Tool would soon announce their disbandment. I can understand their worry. Thankfully, those anxieties were quelled with the release of Salival, which was released in a box set which included CDs and DVDs. Yes, DVDs still exist. Yay. a cover of Led Zeppelin's No Quarter, and a live version of Peaches You Lied, and a revived version of old songs were included on the CDs and the DVDs. The DVD included music videos of four songs and plus bonus video for their song Hush, which was released in Opiate. In 01, Tool announced their new album, Systema Infernal, and it would include 12 new tracks. Now, Napster was a huge file sharing site back in the early 2000s. They were overwhelmed with the release of these songs from the album, and it turned out that it was totally bogus. A month later, Tool revealed that the album was in fact called Lateralis, and the originally released track list was a ruse, which is actually really cool. They later released, this release, I should say, would solidify their footing within the art rock and progressive art rock scene, because this is when they're showing what the band actually is giving to their fans. Now, Rolling Stones went on to say, and I'm quoting this, "Drums, bass, and guitars move in jarring cycles of hyper howl and near-silent death march. The prolonged running times of most of Lateralis's 13 tracks are misleading. The entire album rolls and stomps like Suit Lake Purpose." If you've not heard Lateralis, I highly recommend it. This became highly successful, reaching number one on the US Billboard 200. They also received their second Grammy Award for Best Metal Performance from their song Schism, and once again, Schism. Oh my goodness, if you've not seen it. I know I'm going to be saying that again and again and again, but I do recommend you go watch their music videos. I think this is one of the few bands where I'm like, no, you really need to go watch the music video if they have a music video to really, really enjoy what they have to offer and what they're offering in just general. This is one of the few bands where I'll be going, no, you really need to go see them. Or see the music videos. If you have the chance to go see them, yes, I recommend go see them as well. So following the release, they once again went on tour in 01 to 02. After the completion of this tour, Maynard went back to A Perfect Circle and ended up touring with them. Tool wasn't completely inactive at all. They released the double vinyl 4-picture disc edition of Lateris at this time too. 10,000 Days was their next release, and fans were really, really, really skeptical when Tool announced this release, thanks in part to the prank that they pulled with Lateris's release. So when pre-release information was being disseminated and released, most people actually believed that it was fake. Rightfully so. However, when the album was leaked, the rumors that were surrounding said album release just were gone. They dissipated pretty much overnight. Even though album sales were decent, it received less than favorable reviews compared to Tool's previous release with Lateris. Now, with the less favorable critic reviews of the album, Tool still went on tour, and they kicked their tour off with Coachella in 06. Schedule-wise, it was very much set up like Lateris. Unfortunately, Carey actually had an accident where he tore his biceps after playing with his girlfriend's dog. And he ended up actually going into surgery in February, and Tool actually resumed touring back in April. Vicarious is the title track for 10,000 Days, and I am very sad to say that I've not watched the music video for Vicarious, but it's a very interesting song. And it was nominated by a Best Hard Rock Performance, and 10,000 Days won Best Recording Package at the 49th Grammy Awards. Fear Inoculum, which is what this whole concert was for, pretty much kicked off a lot of things, actually. So in 2012, Tool was touring across the US and Canada for their Tool Winter Tour, and they actually ended up going to Japan for Ozfest Japan in 13. Both Carey and Jones actually both went on record explaining the reasons behind their delay in their fifth full album, which would have been Fear Inoculum. The bands had hopes that they could release the album in 2015, but pointed out that they actually didn't want to rush any kind of things and just didn't want to rush into the deadlines. Now, 2015 came and went, and 2016 was on the horizon, and it had them go back on tour in the US with no album. 2017 saw Maynard record the vocals for their fifth album. However, the album wouldn't be released in 2017. Maynard revealed that the album was about 90% finished at this time, but Carey, in a separate interview, said that the album would definitely be released in 2018, once again, came and went, and there was no material release. During an acceptance award at the Icon Award for the Metal Hammer Golden Gods Awards, I've not seen this, so I have no idea what this is, Maynard said that they would be releasing music soon. There was no date, just soon. He would further go on to say something on Twitter that recordings had ended months previously, actually, and they would be releasing it soon once again. This came as two songs being performed at the Welcome at Rockville Festival in Jacksonville, Florida. They were called Descending and Invincible. Fear Inoculum wouldn't be released until 2019, and it became their third number one on the U.S. billboards. In January 2020, they won Best Metal Performance for their song Tempest at the 62nd Grammy Awards. So like many performers in 2019-2020, they had to cancel their 2020 concerts because of the ongoing and currently ongoing global pandemic. They took this time to actually go on hiatus, which actually I read a lot of bands actually ended up doing during the pandemic. They took the year or two to really recharge their batteries and meet fans full force when they were able to and things opened up again and things of that nature. So they had hopes of reconvening in the future with an EP, actually, in which they were hoping they had more freedom to create because they were no longer tied down to a record label. 2020 saw Jones, Chancellor, and Carey being featured in a instrumental song for The Witness. As I mentioned before, this is when Opiate was re-recorded and released for Opiate Square in March of 2021. And actually, at this time as well, it was announced that they were working on new material for a 6th studio album and that they even had music left over from previous recordings. But the band didn't know how long it would take them to make. Now, Tool likes to take their time with music in general. And I actually appreciate that because it feels like they actually sit down and write songs and try to figure things out as a band and so on and so forth. Tool has named actually several bands that were huge influences on them, such as King Crimson, Melvins, Passion, Pink Floyd, and the Sex Pistols. One of their biggest elements that sets them apart from other bands, at least in my opinion, is their work in visual art. I've mentioned this earlier that not only is Tool a rock band and musicians, but they're also performance artists. And it's really neat to go see in general. And you actually might hear my cat again, so apologies. And not only do they incorporate whatever art that they find for their albums and their videos, but they also use this art in performances and merchandise. Over the years, and they're a pretty established band. Tool has won a one AMFT award for Tempest, one Billboard Music World for Fear Inoculum, 4 Grammy Awards for Anima, Schism, 10,000 Days, and Tempest, and 1 iHeart Radio Award for Fear Inoculum. Their musicality, and this is where the band kid comes out, they like to layer different time signatures, rhythms, tempos. They really like using polymeters. And this is when music consistently falls in and out of sync by playing with rhythms and signatures where they layer these, pretty much. They're also known for using really, really unconventional time signatures with their music. I hate odd time signatures, and this is what they love to use. It's 7, 8, 5, 4, those types of time signatures. So if you're a band kid or are some kind of musician, do exactly know what I'm talking about. Because when you sit there, you have counting face, I guess you can say, where you're sitting there and trying to kind of count. And that really sets them apart too, because of their play with these very odd time signatures that pretty much everyone else hates, but they love. Tone-wise, I'm not good on tone, so I might be missaying this. Tone-wise, they're more like melancholic, and they're very centered. I'm not sure if I'm portraying that correctly, but they're it's like focused almost on hypnotic, almost. Especially when you listen to them, and Maynard's tone, for example, because he's the main singer. But when you listen to them, and listen to the way they layer the music, including how Maynard layers himself in the song as well, it can be very powerful, very hypnotic. And I hope I'm explaining that properly, because tone is not my forte. I can tell you about rhythms and signatures, but tone wise, let's just say I'm slightly tone deaf when it comes to my own things, which is why I'm not a singer. But yes, I know I've mentioned this very early on, I've listened to Tool since middle school, and they've been a pretty much one of the most constant bands outside of maybe Linkin Park in my playlist. I grew up, these are the two bands that I pretty much grew up with, that I pretty much love, that are, their songs are a constant, a very constant mix in my playlist, whatever playlist I'm listening to. And they my music tastes really haven't changed much since my middle school days. I mean, don't get me wrong, I know you guys, when I do spotlight artists, some of the spotlight artists I pick are musicians that I constantly listen to today, but when I look at my playlist, some of the songs that make it into my playlist would not be music that I would have listened to in middle school. but however, Tool is just one of those constant reminders that what my middle school days were like, and no matter the mood I'm in, I'll find a song that I love to play with them. And I think Tool's, if you like rock music and you're new, I say new, but you don't listen to older rock bands or progressive bands or alternative bands or grunge bands, these are one of those ones that I do regularly recommend people listen to. To me, their music feels quite timeless. But before I fully wrap this up, it was a super real honor to be able to go see them live. And I say that for good reason. I don't talk about myself personally usually when I do these podcasts, but I'm chronically ill. I'm chronically special. And sometimes my health doesn't let me enjoy these types of adventures, be able to go to a concert. Let me just say, my anxiety was so high that I probably could have made myself sick. because all I wanted to do was go. Like, I try to keep myself as healthy as possible. In the midst of COVID, by the way, to be able to go to this concert, I wore a mask when I went. I didn't care if I looked weird. I did not care that, you know, people were, like, 99% of people were not wearing masks because mask mandates had been dropped for inside venues. I did not care. I was going to go mask upped and lots of hand sanitizer just to go and fully enjoy this concert. When you're chronically ill, the flu can lay you out pretty quickly. And that's what I was worried about. And I actually, after this concert, I ended up getting sick maybe 3 or 4 days after that. And I think a lot of it was because I was just so worn out and I was so tired. And that's kind of why I wish I did the 2 a.m. podcast, because I was sort of rearing from that energy from the concert. It was such an experience, and I wish I could adequately put that into some words that would be able for you to fully understand what this experience meant to me. And I don't think a lot of people will understand when you have to be aware of your body and yourself 24/7, even in sleep. Like, this isn't just, you know, when you're awake, but even in sleep. And I had known that that me being able to go to the concert, I think, was like in December or November. Not only was my health declining, but I had a very close family member who was undergoing treatment, and things happen, unfortunately, as much as you don't want to admit them. And to be able to go, to be able to fully enjoy this as much as possible, be able to be fully present and enjoy it and just kind of just sit there and listen to them. And they got to play pretty much 2 or 3 of my favorite songs, which I was not expecting them to play at all. Cause it's when I went online to see what their lineup sometimes looks like, not all the time. I was not expecting these songs. They played, like I said, they played The Pot and Sober, and when they say that it's a rarity that they play these songs, they do mean it, because they can't change their lineup very often because of the artwork that they use to do the performance art part of the performance of the concert. So when they say that some of these songs are a rarity, they do actually mean it. And I just had such a blast, and I wish I could do it all again. And it would still probably feel the like the first time. I've read a few times that people who have gone to their concerts a number of times, and it's still an experience. And there are a finite amount of bands, performers, artists that you can actually say that for. And I think Tool will forever be one of those ones that kind of will always be like, it's still an experience. It's still fun to do. It's still fun to go. It's not I saw them once and I'm done. I'm not going to see them again. I would love to see them again. But I think I'm going to wrap this up. I don't know if this will be released this week. I don't even know what this week's... So, originally, I think I had... Serenity and Firefly for a Under the Radar. That might change to a Midnight Binge for Moon Knight, I think. That will be released, I believe, on the 24th. But I'm not sure if it's going to be it's going to be down to the wire for either Firefly and Serenity or a Moon Knight. I might end up with a Firefly and Serenity one because that'll be a multiple parter. And I think we'll either release this week or next week. I tried to keep it one per week, so either it be a actual voiceover podcast or an article. So I'm not 100% sure if I'll also be releasing this on the 24th. It might be released on the 1st. Oh, it's July already. For articles, I think the next one will be maybe another Spotlight artist. I was thinking G-Friend. Yoja Chengu, or tomorrow, Onye, for a Midnight Binge, but I'm not 100% sure because those are articles. For podcasts, this is pretty new, so it'd be this one or another one, but I'll have to sit down and actually do it. So it's either, it's going to be a fight to the death on this one. I'm not sure which is going to be released. It's either going to be here on Tool, hi, or an article for Firefly and Serenity. And like I said, that'll be a multiple parter. Be on the lookout for a website that I'm currently working on. It's currently in the works. It's taking me a hot minute to do because, once again, I am the only person doing this. I'm super excited for the reveal of everything. Hopefully it's coming along nicely, and I say that because I'm just like, it looks fine, but I have no second opinion, so woohoo! Not only for the website will you be able to find these podcasts, but you'll also be able to find blogs. And when I'm not currently creating blogs and podcasts, I do actually certainly hope you have enjoyment with what I have planned and what I have to offer. I think we're going to end it there. Please consider supporting this podcast in any way that you can. That includes listening to this. Follow me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. On Instagram. Hello. I'm on TikTok. Check out the rest of these podcasts and or the articles if you prefer actually reading and sitting down like I do. And we might have a currently reading. I know. My brain just went currently reading and I've got to sit down to do that. You can support this blog/podcast at Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, Ko-Fi, or right here on Anchor or Spotify, wherever you are listening with supporter listening. Until next time.